Ki Jai, Srimati Tulsi Devi Maharani Ki Jai, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, The Lordship Sri Sri Radhisham Sundar Ki Jai, The Lordship Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai, The Lordship Sri Sri Gaunitai Ki Jai, The Lordship Sri Sri Lakshmi Nishinga Dev Ki Jai, Iskandu Ramanurti Dham Ki Jai, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi, All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the Lord, Sri Shri Shri Guru Gauranga. So I would like to dedicate this morning's program to our beloved Mother Narataka Gopal. She has been and still is a mother to me and my wife in so many different ways. Since we first came to the United States, she's one of the first persons who took care of us like a mother, and we always remember that. So we wish her well, and hopefully within a few days or so, we can have back our association here. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11. Chapter 18, we'll start a new chapter, and it's, where is it, in the wrong place, we'll, this chapter is entitled, Description of Varnashram Dharma. So we'll do the chapter summary and then verse number one. Summary. As related in this chapter, Lord Sri Krishna explained to Uddhava the duties of the Vanaprastha and Sannyas orders and the religious practices proper to each of these levels of advancement. One who is taking to the Vanaprastha stage of life should leave his wife at home in the care of his sons, or else take her along, and with a peaceful mind, spend the third quarter of his life in the forest. He should accept as his food whatever bulbs, fruits, roots, and so on that grow in the forest, taking sometimes grains cooked by fire and sometimes fruits ripened by time. Furthermore, he should take as his garments tree bark, grass, leaves, or the skin of a deer. It is described here, it describes that he should perform austerities by not cutting his hair, beard, or nails, nor should he make any special attempt to remove dirt from his limbs. He should bathe three times daily in cold water and sleep upon the ground. During the hot season, he should stand beneath the fearsome heat of the sun with fires blazing on four sides. During the rainy season, he should stand in the midst of the downpour of rain, and during the cold winter, he should submerge himself in water up to his neck. Wow. Actually, when I started reading this, I was thinking, you know, he talked about sleeping on the bare ground. We didn't have to be vanaprasthas to do that. From the time I joined the movement, that was our program. As brahmacharis, we used to be, we would be laying down in rows from shoulders to shoulders, and our belongings fit between our heads. That's all the possession we had. Actually, I was speaking to one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples yesterday, and he was saying that he's now figuring out that his best life was that of a brahmachari, because all their belongings fit in a little bag, And now over the years, he has accumulated so much, and now it's such a pain to untangle all of that. You know, so anyway, I'll read this purport to him again, this chapter summary. Anyway, so he is absolutely forbidden to clean his teeth, to store food that has collected at one time, that he has collected at one time. Oh, to eat at another time, and to worship the Supreme Lord with the flesh of animals. If he can maintain these severe practices for the remainder of his life, the Vanaprastha will achieve the Tapalok planet. The fourth quarter of life is meant for sannyas. Once you develop complete detachment from attaining residence on different planets, up to even Brahmaloka. Such wishes for material elevation are due to desires for the fruits of material activity. When one recognizes that endeavors to achieve residence on the higher planets ultimately award only suffering, then it is enjoined that one should take to sannyas in a spirit of renunciation. The process of accepting sannyas involves worshipping the Lord with sacrifice, giving everything one possesses in charity to the priest, and establishing within one's own heart the various sacrificial fires. For a sannyasi, association with women or even the sight of women is more undesirable than taking poison. Except in emergencies, the sannyasi should never wear more clothing than a loincloth or some simple covering over his loincloth. He should carry no more than his staff and water pot, giving up all violence to living creatures. He should become subdued in the functions of his body, mind, and speech. He should remain detached and fixed on the self and travel alone to such pure places as the mountains, rivers, and forests. Thus engaged, he should remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead and dwell in a place that is fearless and not heavily populated. He should take his alms each day at 7 homes chosen at random from those of the members of the 4 social classes, avoiding only the homes of those who are cursed or fallen. With a pure heart, he should offer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead whatever food he has collected, and take the Mahaprasad remnants. In this way, he should always be mindful that hankering for sense gratification is bondage, and that engaging the objects of the senses in the service of Lord Madhava is liberation. If one lacks knowledge and renunciation, or continues to be troubled by the unconquered 6 enemies headed by lust and the all-powerful senses, or if one accepts the Tridanda, renounce order simply for the purpose of carrying out a livelihood, then he will achieve, as his result, only the killing of his own soul. A Paramahamsa is not under the control of injunction and prohibitions. He is a devotee of the Supreme Lord, detached from external sense gratification and completely free from desire for even such subtle gratificatory goals as liberation. He is expert in discrimination, and thus, like a simple child, is free from concepts of pride and insult. Although actually competent, he wanders about like a dull person. Jadbharat is a typical example. And although most learned, he engages himself like an insane fool in incoherent speech. Although actually fixed in the Vedas, he behaves in an unordered fashion. He tolerates the evil words of others and never shows contempt for anyone else. He avoids acting as an enemy or vainly indulging in argument. He sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead in all creatures and also all living beings within the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In order to keep his body alive for performing worship of the Lord, he accepts whatever excellent or inferior food clothing and bedding he can attain without endeavor. Although he has to make some effort to find food for maintaining his body, he does not become joyful when he finds something, nor does he become depressed when not finding anything. The Supreme Lord himself, although not at all subject to the Vedic orders and prohibitions, by his own free will executes various prescribed duties. Similarly, the Paramahamsas, even while on the platform of freedom from subjugation to Vedic rules and prohibitions, carries out various duties. Because his perception of dualities has become completely eradicated by transcendental knowledge, which is focused on the Supreme Lord, he obtains, upon the demise of his material body, the liberation known as Sarshti, in which one becomes equal in opulence with the Lord. The person who desires his own best interest should take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Filling his mind with faith, keeping free from enviousness, and remaining fixed in devotion, the disciple should serve the spiritual master, whom he should regard as none different from the Supreme Lord. For a brahmachari, the primary duty is service to the spiritual master. The main duties of a householder are protection of living beings and sacrifice. For a vanaprastha, austerities, and for a sannyasi, self-control and nonviolence. Celibacy, practiced by householders at all times except once a month when the wife is fertile, penance, cleanliness, self-satisfaction, friendship with all living beings, and above all, worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are duties meant for every jiva soul. One acquires firm devotion for the Supreme Lord by always rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead through one's own particular prescribed duty. By not engaging in the worship of any other personalities, and also by thinking of all creatures as the place of residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form as a supersoul, the followers of the Karmakanda section of the Vedas can attain the planet of the forefathers and so on by their ritualistic activities. But if they become endowed with devotion for the Supreme Lord, then by these same activities they can achieve the supreme stage of liberation. And now we'll do verse 1. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Vanam Vivikshu Putreshu. Bharyam Nyasya Sahaivava. Vana Eva Vasek Chantas. Tritiyam Bhagam Ayusha. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Vanam Vivikshu Putreshu. Bharyam Nyasya Sahaivava. Vana Eva Vasek Chantas. Tritiyam Bhagam Ayushaha. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Vanam Vivikshu Putreshu. Bharyam Nyasya Sahaivava. Vana Eva Vasek Chantas. Tritiyam Bhagam Ayusha. Please chant. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Vanam Vivikshu Putreshu. Bharyam Nyasya Sahaivava. Vana Eva Vasak Chantas. Tritiyam Bhagam Ayusha. Mutters.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Vanam Vivikshu Putreshu. Varyam Yasya Sahaivava. Vana Eva Vachak Chantas. Shrityam Bhagam Aisha. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Vanam Vivikshu Putreshu. Varyam Yasya Sahaivava. Vana Eva Vasak Chantas. Shrityam Bhagam Ayusa. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Vanam, the forest, Vivikshuhu, desiring to enter, Putreshu, among the sons, Baryam, wife, Nyasya, entrusting, Saha, together with, Eva, indeed, Va, or, Vane, in the forest, Eva, certainly, Vasat, one should dwell, Shantaha, with a peaceful mind, Tritiyam, the third, Bhagam, division, Ayushaha, of life. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So, translation. The Supreme Personality of God had said, one who desires to adopt the third order of life, Vanaprastha, should enter the forest with a peaceful mind, leaving his wife with his mature sons, or else taking her along with him. Purport. In Kali Yuga, a human being generally cannot live more than 100 years. And even this is becoming most unusual. A man who has a reasonable expectation of living for 100 years may adopt the Vanaprastha order at the age of 50. And then at the age of 75, he may take sannyas for complete renunciation. Since in Kali Yuga, few people live for 100 years, one should adjust the schedule accordingly. Vanaprastha is indeed intended as a gradual transition from materialistic family life to the stage of complete renunciation. Om Agana Timurinasi Agana Janashalakaya Chakshun Maitanyana Tasmai Shri Guru Kaya Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishnaya Mipurvesh Madhushila Vibhava Pabuti Namaya Shri Shri Vrindata Vivira Padapad Pankajadaya Nipurupada Nupadaya Namah Shri Vibhava Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishnaya Mipurvesh Madhushila Vibhava Pabuti Namaya Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Sanyavani Paschacha Deshutani. So, in the last chapter, we were discussing Brahmacharya and Grihastha lives. And now we are discussing Vanaprastha. Next week, we will be discussing Sannyas life. So, the Vedic culture has a system set up for the gradual transition. So Vanaprastha life is pretty much what we would commonly call a retired life. So even in the material world or the material system, there is some provision for that. In a material way, of course, but the idea is there. Like you find pretty much all the countries of the world, the government would create some system or plan for the citizens for retirement in their own way, like social security, pensions, and so forth. And so they're preparing, well, okay, during your working lifespan, that by force, it's not that you have a choice. By force, they would deduct from your paychecks and so forth, like their social security, their different deductions that comes out. Or when you file your taxes, you have to pay those. And you're paying that so that when you retire, then you get those benefits. So they're enforcing it for the benefit of the citizens. So, similarly, in the Vedic conception and in the Vedic literatures and culture, we have this retirement plan is there. That, as we went through here in the last chapter, we see that there is training. So, and it is enforced on the most part, or it's available for those who want to take advantage of it. Just like in the material system, is that if one wants to take advantage of his retirement program, then they would make sacrifices to contribute more to, let's say, their IRA funds or their social security funds. You know, sometimes, generally, there's only like 4 credits one can get per year, and you have to get a minimum of 40 credits to get full retirement benefits. So some people would just try to contribute only the basic 4 credits per year. But there are others who wants to take more advantage of that. They would contribute as much as they can during their working life. So at retirement time, we would actually, or they would get much more benefits. So, not only the basics. So similarly, even in Vedic conception, is that one is being trained, or the culture is that one is being trained from the very beginning to accept like a brahmacharya life. And from a good brahmacharya life, then one can enter a successful and responsible grihastha life. And then one can train and move on. So in this chapter here, what we just read, there are a lot of vigorous austerities that are performed. So why is that? It's there because the general idea is that, okay, you're living in Vedic civilization, not necessarily devotional service. You're being brought up in a cultured life, and then there are these regulations which are already practiced in society, so it makes it a little easier for you. But that you're performing these activities that would drag you out, force you into retirement. For one, the body would not hold up, so we can't enjoy in a lot of sensual activities, even though we try to our best. Actually, some years ago, I had a previous job where I had to visit clients in Miami. So I went to one man's house, and in the middle of Coconut Grove, I went there and I went to knock on his door. He said, "Come in, the door is open, it's unlocked." I said, "That was very strange. You don't hear stuff like that in Miami, that, oh, the door is unlocked. Just come in." You know, they would screen you, peek through the hole, see who is there. And, you know, so it's a lot more screening. But this guy says, "Just come on in." And when I opened the door, I didn't see him. So I said, "Where are you?" He said, "Oh, come over here. I'm sitting on the couch watching television." So the TV was on. So when I went there, he said, "Let me change his channel." So he feel for the remote control, and he felt the button and he changed it. And then he lowered the volume. So then when something else came on, he said, "Oh, I don't like this one." So he didn't switch the channel again to another channel. So afterwards I realized that this guy is totally blind. So then I asked, "Well, you know, you're totally blind. What are you doing with television, and why do you want more?" Because that's what I was there for increases television entertainment. That's the job I had at the time. So he said, "Well, this is the only enjoyment I have, that when I lost my sight, My wife left, she went away, all my kids left, and I have nothing else, so I can't see, but at least I can hear, and this is my enjoyment. So, you know, the idea is that, okay, let's try to hold on as much as possible. Dhritarashtra was doing the same thing, and thanks to his brother Viduraji, came and dragged him out of that situation, literally dragged him out. If you read back in the, you know, what we just finished, was really horrible to give such sharp words to your especially elder brother. But it was necessary. So here you find that these things are so strong, these statements. Look, when you read this, I was thinking, oh, I hope that there are no first timers listening in the internet or anything like that, which a lot sure people listen throughout the world, that hear these things. I mean, to be honest with you, if you know, the first day I came to Krishna consciousness, I was introduced to this part of the Bhagavatam, I probably wouldn't have been here, because it's so strong and so heavy that, you know, and it's so like really graphic per se. But this is what is needed to bring one out, to remove them from this atmosphere. And therefore, the civilization is set up in such a way, the Bhagavatam is set up in such a way that you can go through this gradual process. And if you take these in good spirit, then you can get some level of success. So, I have a few quotes here from Srila Prabhupada, what he said about this, about Vanaprastha Ashram. This one is Srimad Bhagavatam 9.19.3. Purport. Persons who live in the village or town are called Grama Nivesha, Nivasi, and those who live in the forest are called Vanavasi or Vanaprastha. The Vanaprasthas who have retired from family life generally lament about their past family life because it engaged them in trying to fulfill lusty desires. Prahlad Maharaj said that one should retire from family life as soon as possible. And he described family life as the darkest well. Hitvatma Patam Griham Andakupam, very popular. Right, Keshav Prabhu? Yes, I know that's one of your favorite lines. So, I've known him forever. Yeah, okay. If one continuously or permanently concentrates on living with his family, he should be understood to be killing himself. Same thing that's repeated in the purport. In this summary here. In a Vedic civilization, therefore, it is recommended that one retire from family life at the end of his 50th year and go to Vana, the forest. When he becomes expert or accustomed to forest life or retired life as a Vanaprastha, he should accept sannyas. That's Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.5. That's a quote from there. Sannyas means accepting unalloyed engagement in the service of the Lord. Vedic civilization, therefore, recommends four different stages of life: brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. One should be very much ashamed of remaining a householder and not promoting oneself to the two higher stages, namely vanaprastha and sannyas. This is from Bhagavatam 9.19.3. So, Srila Prabhupada is saying a similar thing here, quoting Prahlad Maharaj, and this is giving instructions, Prahlad Maharaj giving instructions to basically was indicating, and later we will hear how he would give similar instructions to his father. So, these are what I would call reality checks, that we are living in this life. But we have to look ahead. We always have to look ahead and see what's beyond and follow the manual. You know, so here Yudhishthira Maharaj is inquiring from Narad Muni on the same thing. And this is in Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 14, Text 1. The verse, Maharaj Yudhishthira inquired from Narad Muni, "O my Lord, O great sage, kindly explain how we who are staying at home without knowledge of the goal of life may also easily attain liberation, according to the instructions of the Vedas." Purport. In the previous chapters, the great sage Narada has explained how a brahmachari, a vanaprastha, and a sannyasi should act. He first explained the dealings of a brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyasi, because these three ashrams, or statuses of life, are extremely important for fulfillment of the goal of life. One should note that in the brahmachari ashram, vanaprastha ashram, and sannyas ashram, there is no scope for sex life, whereas sex is allowed in grihastha life under regulations. Narad Muni, therefore, first described brahmacharya, vanaprastha, and sannyas because he wanted to stress that sex is not at all necessary, although one who absolutely requires it is allowed to enter grihastha life or household life, which is also regulated by the shastras and guru. Yudhisthira Maharaj could understand all this. Therefore, as a grihastha, he presented himself as a gaha moha dehu, or one who is completely ignorant of the goal of life. A person who remains a householder in family life is certainly ignorant of life's goal. He is not very much advanced in intelligence. As soon as possible, one should give up his so-called comfortable life at home and prepare to undergo austerities or tapasya. Tapo devyam putraka. That's Bhagavatam 551. According to the instructions given by Rishabdev to his sons, we should not create a so-called comfortable situation, but must prepare to undergo austerities. This is how a human being should act, actually live to fulfill life's ultimate goal. So, here again, we all understand that Maharaj Yudhisthira is doing this for the sake of the public. That is described that he understood all of these, yet, for the benefit of others, he is representing these questions and inquiries. So, this is the advantage that we have, that we have a culture that can give us beyond, way beyond, what material life has to offer. So, here's another quote, this one with from the 7th canto, 12th chapter, text 1, purport. After the grihastha ashram is another ashram known as vanaprastha, which is midway between grihastha and sannyas. A person in a vanaprastha order is restricted in eating food grains and forbidden to eat fruits that have not ripened on a tree. Nor should he cook food with fire, although he is allowed to eat charu, grains that have been offered in sacrifice. He may also eat fruits and grains that have grown naturally. Living in a thatched cottage, the vanaprastha should endure all kinds of heat and cold. He should not cut his hair or nails, and he should give up cleaning his body and teeth. He should wear tree bark, accept a danda, and practice life in the forest. Taking a vow to live there for 12 years, 8 years, 4 years, 2 years, or at least 1 year. At last, when because of old age he can no longer perform the activities of a vanaprastha, he should gradually stop everything and in this way give up his body. So, this is another atomic bomb of a purport regarding vanaprastha life. So, these are very, very graphic per se, and really challenging even to read. I know whenever I read this, as I'm doing right now, I'm shivering. So, with all this being said, that these are the injunctions of Vedic culture, and it's recommended or even sort of enforced that one follows this path. Now, in our present situation, how much can we adopt this? Especially when the culture here is so very different. You know, no one has idea of Vedic culture. And no one has this knowledge of maintenance of saintly persons. I know in India, you still have many traces of that. Even Guyana, there are many traces. I remember when I used to be there, sometimes we would just walk down the street and people would stop us and give us milk to drink or give us bhoga and so forth. So much so that once in one temple, the devotees used to go out a certain amount of days per week to do harinams. And when they go, so much people would give them, like in the marketplace, give them so much piles of bhoga that they have to leave it and then come back with a vehicle later to pick it up. So there was one devotee, just joined the temple. He didn't know, and when he went out on harinam, he got this impression. Okay, harinam, bhoga, you get bhoga. So there was one devotee, you might have remembered him, Trivikram Kesho, Harikirtan from England. In those days, he was known for just harinam every day, wherever he goes. So he came to visit Guyana. So he came to the temple on that Wednesday when they were supposed to do harinam. No one was going. So he just came. He didn't know who was who. So he approached this young bhakta and said, you know, what happened? Aren't we going out on harinam today? So the young bhakta said, no, Prabhu, we have enough bhoga in the temple. So that was his concept. So anyway, the idea is that the culture was such that, you know, people would supply. You know, these are sadhus, these are saintly persons, these are renunciants. So they supply, they give. But in today's society, at least in the Western countries here, that culture is not so much there. So, not to speak of practicing these austerities. You know, for one thing, these were written when you had a different level of Vedic civilization where a certain understanding was there that people carry on their life and hopefully at the end they can try to advance in spiritual life. Thank you very much, Prabhu. So, you know, in that being said, is that with nowadays, what our situation is, how can we practice this, or how can we take advantage of a retired life, and what can we do? So I have two more purports here that I want to read, and that would help us to come to a little bit of that understanding. This is in Bhagavatam, again, 7.5.5. In the Varnashram system, one first becomes a brahmachari, then a grihastha, a vanaprastha, and finally a sannyas. Going to the forest means accepting vanaprastha life, which is between grihastha life and sannyas. As confirmed in the Vishnu Puran, and also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majja 8.58, by accepting the institution of Varna and Ashram, one can very easily elevate himself to the platform of worshipping Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, if one remains in the bodily conception, one must rot within this material world, and his life will be a failure. Society must have divisions of Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Sudra. And for spiritual advancement, one must gradually develop as a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Prahlad Maharaj recommended that his father accept vanaprastha life because as a grihastha, he was becoming increasingly demoniac due to bodily attachment. Prahlad recommended to his father that accepting vanaprastha life would be better than going deeper and deeper into Griham Andakupam, the blind well of life as a grihastha. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we therefore invite all the elderly persons of the world to come to Vrindavan and stay there in retired life, making advancement in spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, And we have a last one here. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 24, text 260. The verse, Narad Muni then advised the hunter, return home and distribute whatever riches you have to the pure brahmanas who know the absolute truth. After you have distributed all your riches to the brahmanas, you and your wife should leave home, each of you taking only one cloth to wear. Purport. This is the process of renunciation at the stage of vanaprastha. After enjoying household life for some time, the husband and wife must leave home and distribute their riches to brahmanas and Vaishnavas. One can keep his wife as an assistant in the vanaprastha stage. The idea is that the wife will assist the husband in spiritual advancement. Therefore, Narad Muni advised the hunter to adopt the vanaprastha stage and leave home. It is not that a grihastha should live at home until he dies. Vanaprastha is preliminary to sannyas. In the Krishna consciousness movement, there are many young couples engaged in the Lord's service. Eventually, they are supposed to take vanaprastha, and after the vanaprastha stage, the husband may take sannyas in order to preach. The wife may then remain alone and serve the deity or engage in other services within the Krishna consciousness movement. So here is the answer. Yes. No. This is the purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 24, text 260. So here we have the answer and solution to our problems. How do we translate what is stated here from the Vedic culture, where the culture, the understanding, the practice, everything was different? Everyone has the idea of maintenance of sadhus or respect or understanding that when one is performing these rigorous austerities, that they are doing it for spiritual advancement and that they are not just crazy bums on the street. So how can we understand? Srila Prabhupada gave the answer here. That he created, Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada created this ISKCON, you know, a home in which the whole world can live. Satra Maharaj wrote a book on this. Srila Prabhupada, he built a house in which the whole world can live. So, within our society, this provision is there. And not only that it's there, but from day one, Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya, they completely transgress the Vedic graduation of this gradual process, and he make us into pure devotees in that he engage us in pure devotional service. So whichever ashram you're in, is only one thing that's practiced, pure devotional service. So in that sense, one doesn't really need to even change ashram or even get out of the grihastha ashram if it's properly followed. Because according to Srila Prabhupada also, I don't have a quote here, but I think it's in the third canto, or probably the fourth with that Puranjan story. It's mentioned that that a grihastha who properly follow the principles is not considered a grihastha, but is considered a grihastha brahmachari. So they're just as good as the brahmacharis or the vanaprastas. So this facility is created here, pure devotional service, which transcends these varnas and ashrams and everything that we have discussed here today. Our practice of Krishna consciousness transcends all of that. And not only that, but a facility is being created that replaces this culture that it's only existing in very small parts of the world. But it exists. So anywhere in the world we can go, we can take advantage of this Krishna consciousness movement. There's always a place to stay, plenty of prasadam. You know, we don't have to go through these austerities here. So there's so much. And even you know, as later next week we would hear some of the regulations for sannyas life. One of that regulation is that a sannyasi should not cross over bodies of water or cross the ocean. Well, guess what? That's what our sannyasi, that's all that they do, cross the ocean. Once I asked Japadak Maharaj, where do you reside? He said, what do you mean? Where do I spend most of my time? I said, yes. He said, up in the air and over the oceans. I asked my Guru Maharaj the same question. He said, I spend most of my time at Delta Airlines. So all these appears to be transgressions of Vedic injunctions. But if you look at it on this note, in context of Krishna consciousness, context of Bhakti Yoga, devotional service also transgresses, not only surpasses, but also sometimes transgresses the rules and regulations laid down for these different ashrams and culture. Oh, this is saying time to stop. So, anyway, so these regulations, you know, can be substituted by the facilities that has been created for us. And now we have so many, we have devotees, you know, from brahmacharis to very young grihasa. Srila Prabhupada talked about this in this last quote I gave. Some of them engage so much. I know very young devotee couples, literally teenagers. They would be preaching all over the place. They would not be settled. And that's really wonderful. I know in my own case, you know, we got betrothed. She went back to one temple, the forest end of the country. I went back to the other, and we stayed for years, you know, like that. And we were always engaged. So this movement has that facility that whichever ashram you're in, this engagement is there for you. So this is transcendental devotional service. Maramukhya was calling upon devotees a few weeks ago, and especially older devotees retire, to go and help at other temples. There is so much facility here, so much strength, so much ripened energy. So go out and share that with other temples that you already have devotees. So this is one way of engaging in vanaprastha life. Go out there. So, anyway, I would like to stop here. Any questions, Mother Sukhada? Excuse me.
Thank you for your class. Yeah, and when you were talking about the vanaprast and how the couple is supposed to not bathe. It seems so unusual because Srila Prabhupada was so clean and, yeah, you know, that's stressed, yeah, so much, yeah, in the scriptures. It seems like another something else that we would transgress because we see so many devotees, yeah, they're preaching, you know, vanaprast or, mm-hmm, single, whatever, you know, up until their last breath, and to be not bathing would definitely be interfering with the preaching process. So,
yeah, so it should be understood that in the context of what was written here in the Bhagavatam, that these vanaprastas, as for this, you know, verse here, that they weren't preaching. Right. They were going to the forest in preparation to take sannyas for some future date. So that cannot be practiced in this age and here, and that's not for preaching. But for preaching, Srila Prabhupada said the first thing, cleanliness is next to godliness. So we should, you know, perform cleanliness. In what we're discussing here in this time, all these are things that one should do to give up attachment for the opposite party, to give up attachment. Can you imagine? At least I can't imagine if I don't bathe or cut my hair, you know, my wife probably not going to even cook for me, not to speak of wanting to see me. So that's the idea. The idea is to create a situation to break out, break you away from family attachment, break you away from these things. So these austerities of the body and mind is what is there. But Srila Prabhupada, like I would use a term, put us all in a pot of khichdi and stir us up. So from day one, he give us this facility that you can break out this trend of material life from day one. From the youngest, you know, the youngest brahmachari came. I remember the first day I came to this movement, I almost wanted to leave. I came up, I went to the temple, and there was this one little brahmachari, Narsinga. I don't know, he was about 6 years, 7 years old. So I didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness. I saw him, I know about, you know, about the beads, but I had never seen the bead bag. So I saw him with this bead bag around his neck. So then, you know, I thought he has a dhoti, kurta, there is no, just a t-shirt, there's no pockets, nothing to put your stuff in. So I said, hey, you know, what do you do with that bag? You know, you keep your money and so forth. And he starts screaming at me. Yeah. He starts screaming. He said, do you think we are attached? Do you think we are karmis? We are materialists that we take? No, this here is for your japa beads that you chant as Hare Krishna. And he was six years old. But the way he presented it, like I want to run away, you know. But anyway, so from day one, you know, just little boy like that, on the flip side of things, from day one, we've been given this opportunity to practice a renounced life. So therefore, we don't have to go through all those processes. It's like Srila Prabhupada said, the Vedic culture is like taking the staircase. Krishna consciousness is like taking the elevator. So that's our benefit here. You got anything more to say? Or Srila Karma Prabhu?
Thank you.
So, in our system, there is some form, like you've read here, some understanding of vanaprastha and sannyas, but it's not as rigid as within the varnashram system itself, but it's there. Like celibacy has to be practiced in vanaprastha and sannyas and brahmachari. So in our ISKCON movement now, some advocates have it that, you know, well, one could stay with his wife and preach. Mm. One could, you know, I mean, one could stay in householder life forever once he can preach. Mm. And then some advocate have it that at least one should gradually try to become detached.
When you say advocate, what are you talking about? Like, Krishna consciousness?
Within ISKCON.
Within ISKCON, okay.
Yeah, we know some GBCs, you know, if our mm-hmm. GBC, you know, would say, well, maybe it's proper if you can preach to remain in householder life mm-hmm. and family, you know. And but then you have some proponents, some, you know, other devotees, even sannyasis would say that, well, you should try to detach yourself some way or the other. So what you've read from what Srila Prabhupada stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita there is that actually one should make an attempt to become detached from householder life, even if he's preaching with his wife. But the honest question can be asked is, how can you remain celibate with you living with your wife, you know what I mean?
It's all by practice. Actually, Srila Prabhupada said, and he said it with confidence, if you go to Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, text 15, in that purport, Srila Prabhupada said, you said it right there, that very question he answered, that this system of devotional service, of bhakti yoga, is so powerful. He said in all other schools, the grihastha ashram is completely forbidden. He said it's only in the bhakti school that grihasthas and indulgence is there, because the potency of bhakti is so great that one does not become attached to those activities. With all, he lives with wife and family, that his focus can be very, very straight. So in that purport is more detail to that. So then coming back to your point of what you're saying, some GBCs or grihasthas said, everything is individual. We cannot compare one situation with another. For some people, it's better not to take vanaprastha or sannyas life. It's better to stay a grihastha. For some people, it might be better to do that. Just like for some people, it might be better to remain single. Some people better to get married. It's all individual situations, so you have to see it on a one-on-one basis. We can't use one statement and put it in a general term. It doesn't work like that. Because we're all different. Just like for some devotees, I know this topic coming from time to time, some devotees, they get a lot of material facilities, and some, it's all being taken away. Some reasons for that is that, you know, some can engage that in Krishna service and don't be attached to it, and while others, the slightest thing they get, they would be attached. So therefore, it's better that, you know, you don't have. So it's all individual. You know, it's all there. So it's all on a one-on-one scenario. So we as devotees, we are here in association, but we have to have our individual strength, and we have to see that each one of us as an individual, what's good for this person may not necessarily be good for the other person, even within the context of Krishna consciousness. Does that answer?
Well, to some extent, but if it boils down to individuality, and each one takes it according to his situation, then the rules, then each person can say that they're following like a different rule.
No. The point here is that Srila Prabhupada said that the principle should remain, but the details may change due to circumstance. So, you know, the principle has to be the same. Like Srila Prabhupada said, I've traveled the world, I've seen it all, my best advice takes and yes. Okay, so, and then Srila Prabhupada state here that everyone should, I just read it in this purport, in this Madhya 4:24-260, that everyone should gear towards that. Now, how one does that, or how one takes and facilitates that, then that's a different story. You know, some people is not necessary. Look like Srila Prabhupada, thanks to his good wife, that she wasn't following so much, if not, we would have been doomed. Imagine if they had very good relationship. And his father saw that from the beginning when he was a young man, because he was attracted to another girl. And his father told him, don't marry that girl. I'm going to get married to this girl who you don't like so much. Because that would be an impetus for your spiritual life. So whenever things happen, it happened for a reason. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I heard somewhere that they have a samadhi for his wife, Bhagavati Devi, because she was such a powerful devotee. She was very, very advanced. Try to understand, being the mother of 12 children, has a husband that has such a sadhana, that pretty much, you know, she probably had to make appointment to say Hare Krishna to him. You know, yeah, figure out he had, with that sadhana, I think Nagaraj Prabhu was calculating the other day, you know, like, you know, he only had about 6 minutes in a day to speak with one of his child. 6 minutes, time up, next, you know. So imagine living in a situation like that. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur never took sannyas. because his grihastha situation was so much perfect and conducive for his program. You know, his wife was very cooperative and was very dedicated. Some of us, you know, things may be different. Or sometimes it's better, you know, to be preaching in different areas. So everything is different. So we can't, the general thing is there, we should do this, yes. So if one wants to use an excuse, then that's a different thing. One wants to use this leniency per se, well, okay, situation is individual, then that's a different thing. Like one time Srila Prabhupada told his two sannyas, young sannyas, he just initiated them into sannyas order, Gargamani Swami and the other one, I don't remember who it was. But he turned to the first one, he said, now, and this they were at Krishna Balaram Mandir, he said, now that you have taken sannyas, you should leave here, just travel the world and preach. And then he turned to Gargamani Swami, he said, now that you have taken sannyas, you should stay here and manage. And they were sitting right there next to each other in the same room. Completely different instructions. Is that contradictory? On a base level, you say yes, because sannyas should travel and preach. But everything in his movement, because his movement is transcendental, everything has a purpose. Even if someone appears to do something wrong, it's probably a purpose behind it. Of course, that's a topic for a whole other class, so we'll just stop here. Anything else? Anyway, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.